Kissinger's role in rehabilitating the national security state.
Greg Grandin, I want to thank you for being with us, professor of Latin American history at New York University. His new book, Kissinger's Shadow, The Long Reach of America's Most Controversial Statesman. That does it for our broadcast. Democracy Now! Is produced by Mike Burke, Carla Wills, Laura Gottesdiener, Dina Guzder, Amy Littlefield, Noreen Sheikh, Sam Alkoff. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
You are listening to KBOO Portland. Stay tuned for Wednesday Talk Radio, featuring a live debate on a proposed Nestle water bottling plant at the City of Cascade Locks.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Lights, Camera, Action, making video easy on Wednesday, September 2nd, 6 p.m. at Portland Community Media. Lights, Camera, Action, a collaboration between PDX Tech for Good and Portland Community Media. This seminar will show you how to make high-quality video for outreach and fundraising using the cutting-edge technology available at Portland Community Media. Again, that's Lights, Camera, Action, making video easy on Wednesday, September 2nd, 6 p.m. at Portland Community Media, 2766 Northeast MLK Jr. Boulevard in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Have you entered the KBOO Fall Membership Drive sweepstakes? The grand prize is a trip to Busurias, Mexico, including $1,000 in airfare and a week's worth of lodging at Casa Tranquila. Other prizes include a Portland Center Stage Flex Pass, hundreds of dollars to Grand Central Bakery, and health and wellness packages at Evolution Healthcare and Fitness. We have raised over $10,000 at this time to help shorten the fall membership drive. Remember, for every $15,000 we raise before September 9th, we will take one day off our fall membership drive. A donation is not required to enter the sweepstakes. For more info, visit kboo.fm/2015fallsweeps. And thank you to everyone who has donated early to the Fall Membership Drive.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to present Arresting Power, Resisting Police Violence in Portland, Oregon, as part of the KBOO at the Clinton Monthly Film Series. Arresting Power documents the history of conflict between the Portland police and community members throughout the past 50 years and creates a space for understanding the impacts of police violence and imagining a world without police. Again, that's Arresting Power. Thursday, September 10th, 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Good morning. This is Wednesday Talk Radio here on KBOO Community Radio. My name is Paul Rowland. I'm your host for this hour. And that was Water Song by Hot Tuna. Give you a little bit of the feel for what we're going to be talking about this morning. Sound of water falling musically. And I've got three guests in the studio to talk about the issue that you've heard a lot about here on KBOO and perhaps elsewhere. It's been covered in the major media in the Portland and certainly out in the Gorge, Portland area, certainly out in the Columbia River Gorge. The proposal to build a Nestle water bottling plant in the city of Cascade Locks, which has had a fairly long history. It came up, I forget, it was like 6 years ago or so, and then fell off, and then has come back in the past year again, and especially with the proposal to trade water rights between the water coming from Oxbow Springs and municipal groundwater. It's a proposal that has been made to the State Water Resources Board by the City of Cascade Locks and the Department of Fish and Wildlife. And that decision, final decision on that, is still pending. So, to talk about this issue and its various aspects, we have three guests. As I said, we have the City Administrator of the City of Cascade Locks, Gordon Zimmerman. Good morning.
Good morning.
We have Aurora Del Valle and Ed Del Valle with the Local Water Alliance, which formed in the past few months to oppose this project. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So we're going to have this a sort of a formal debate style at the beginning. Then we're going to open it up for callers and to have you ask your questions. Each of the guests is going to, they're going to introduce themselves, and then each side, as it were, will have a short statement, and then I'll ask three questions covering economics, environment, and this community, how it's affecting the community. So let's get right into it. So start from my left and go to the right. Aurora, just say something about yourself.
Okay, well, Ed and I are both community college teachers. So I teach at Portland Community College and Ed teaches at Mount Hood Community College. So we're pretty ordinary people. We're Cascade Locks residents and we've formed the Local Water Alliance. So other residents, the tribal people, Hood River County residents, and then our neighbors across the river in Stevenson. And our mission is to really you know, to push for the protection and conservation of our local water. And, you know, we're really looking at responsible use that really serves the fishing community, farming, jobs, industries, orchards. So first, Oh, sorry about that. Okay.
And hi, I'm Ed Del Valle, and ditto to what my wife mentioned, and I'm just a concerned local resident of Cascade Locks in Hood River County that's concerned about our water supply. And I'm also an avid recreationalist who enjoys being out on the water. So water has been a very important part of my life ever since I was a kid.
And Gordon.
I'm Gordon Zimmerman. I'm the city administrator of Cascade Locks, where the Bridge of the Gods spans the heart of the gorge, where mountain, wind, and water create the best sailing in the Northwest, and where CL on the license plate stands for Cascade Locks, the second largest city in Hood River County. I've been with the city for 2 years and 9 months, and then working for the council to bring economic development to the community.
And what does the city administrator do?
He's the chief municipal officer for all of the departments, planning, streets, public works, water, fire, electric, the utilities report to me.
Okay, and I'm sure almost all our listeners know where Cascade Locks. It's on the way out for Portlanders anyway, speaking here in the studios in inner southeast Portland. You jump on the freeway. Is one way to get out there, the main way to get out there, and get off just about, 5-10 miles before Hood River?
It's 20 miles.
20 miles yeah. before Hood River. It always seems so close.
Exit 44.
Exit 44 off of Highway 84. That's where Cascade Locks is from Portland. Of course, from the other direction, it's the opposite. Okay, so starting with Mr. Zimmerman, give us your brief statement of why Cascade Locks is supporting this project.
Thank you, Mr. Roland, for this opportunity. The city of Cascade Locks is currently experiencing 18.8% unemployment. The city council is determined to provide an economic base for our community. Tourism is doing well with the best year we've ever had. New businesses are opening on Main Street, houses are being built, existing houses are being sold. The port of Cascade Locks is responsible for the economic development of the region to help provide jobs for our community of 1,235 people. The city of Cascade Locks is responsible for the infrastructure that new jobs rely upon: adequate water, adequate power, wastewater treatment, and good streets. The city has experienced economic disappointments in the past. We didn't get the casino. The lumber industry was decimated by environmental concerns. For the first time in years, the city is attracting the attention of potential manufacturing interests. Bear Mountain Wood Products is expanding. A new value-added agricultural industry is coming to town. A local family is working on a fish processing plant. The most successful towns have a mix of business and industry. The city and port are trying to attract that industry because it provides a greater and more stable financial foundation for the community. In 2008, Nestle Waters North America approached the city about the possibility of locating a water bottling plant in Cascade Locks. The company is interested in the water from Oxbow Springs, which is just south of the city of the Oxbow Fish Hatchery of the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife, which uses that water in their fish rearing process for endangered fish. The proposal is to trade 1/2 cubic foot of water per second of spring water for 1/2 cubic foot per second of groundwater. That's 118 million gallons a year, which sounds like a lot, but we have an abundance of water in Cascade Locks. A city lives on its resources. The resources in Cascade Locks are wind for sailing, dirt for hiking and recreation, and water. It's a great fit for the community.
And folks from the Local Water Alliance, your statement.
Well, first of all, I want to just agree with Gordon. You know, we've seen tremendous movement going on in our local community. We're excited about the new businesses that have shown up that weren't here when Nestle first approached our city. So, but things have changed. So things have changed for the better in our community, but they've also changed, you know, as all of us have experienced here with the extreme hot temperatures and the drought. And I think that our group, the Local Water Alliance, you know, we really want us to stress that we need to learn from California. Hood River is officially in drought, along with 20 plus counties in Oregon. And even without Nestle being here, the fish and the health of the river and streams have been stressed out. We need cold water for the health of our river and fish and other wildlife. So our question is, you know, really we're here to ask critical questions about letting Nestle in. We're concerned. We think that the possibility of letting Nestle in will set a dangerous precedent for Hood River County and for Oregon. It'll set, a dangerous precedent for Oregon. And we can't stress enough, you know, the importance of conservation and responsible use. The other thing I want to bring up, you know, and it's been brought up before, that this is a Cascade Locks issue alone for the residents of Cascade Locks to decide. And we really believe that this is a much bigger issue than Cascade Locks. The river, the Columbia River, touches so many people, many counties, but obviously it really affects Hood River County, the people, the fish, the wildlife. So there's a wide reach. And we really want to stress that this is an issue for Hood River County. We're an agricultural community. We depend on that water. And, you know, we really think that we need to take a good neighbor's approach and also be in line with the Native American value of seven generations. We need to think in the longer, you know, the longer vision, because the drought is likely, you know, to be with us long term. So we just really want to stress the far-reaching impact of a water bottling plant in our county. Okay.
So I want to ask callers to give us a chance to get into a little more in depth into this issue before you call in. I will give the number now, though. It's a 503-231-8187. If in about 10 to 15 minutes you'd like to jump into this conversation. So the first question, and I guess I'll just go from Gordon Zimmerman over to you two, Ed and Aurora Delval with the Local Water Alliance, and Gordon Zimmerman, the city administrator of Cascade Locks. So the first question is an economics question. This, you know, large projects like this are often wanted by local communities, especially, you know, economically struggling rural communities, as so many are in Oregon and elsewhere, and seen as sort of a solution to, as you mentioned, the 18 to 19% unemployment rate, a solution to unemployment and other economic issues that are facing these communities. So talk about that. Talk about what sort of economic benefits specifically you think this project will bring.
Well, the first benefit, at full build out, the plant would bring about 50 jobs into the community. That doesn't seem like a lot when you're a large community, but we're only 1,235 people. It would also bring a $50 million plant. The Bruce Sorte of Oregon State University estimated about a $34 million annual impact to Hood River County. The jobs would not necessarily go to local people. It would go to people who are qualified, but we live at the confluence of Mount Hood Community College, Columbia Gorge Community College, and Clark Community College across the river, and they're all willing to do training to help people qualify for the jobs. It would benefit the city. The state has a program called Enterprise Zones that provides a property tax abatement for the first 3 to 5 years, but to qualify for that, they have to pay their employees an average salary and benefits of 150% of the median household income in Cascade Locks, which is currently $41,000. So 150% of that's about $62,000 in salary and benefits. So it would provide an immediate economic boost to the community, as well as the property taxes collected. And the city would benefit because we sell water and wastewater services, and we also have the electric utility. So the city would benefit from greener revenues in providing those utilities to the position or to the company.
And Ed, do you have?
Yeah, I'd like to respond to that. I mean, first of all, I think we need to keep in mind the larger picture here. And how things may turn out, you know, down the road in terms of issues of water supply. If we have a diminished water supply, we won't have a strong local economy, neither in our town nor in the greater Hood River County. And we have to think about, you know, how this is all going to play out as the projected droughts continue. What's that going to do to agribusiness in Hood River Valley and to farming in our valley? And as agribusiness and farming suffers and struggles with the drought, you know, that trickles down to restaurants, that trickles down to markets, it trickles down to residents. And so we really do need to consider the larger picture. And I hear what Gordon is saying about, you know, unemployment specifically in our town of Cascade Locks. And, you know, that's something we do need to work on. And I know, you know, Mount Hood Community College is trying to work with the city on trying to improve job readiness in our town. But quite frankly, you know, job readiness, you know, takes time. And as Gordon mentioned, you know, the potential jobs that may become available may not go to locals. So local residents in our town may not benefit from that. I just also want to comment on a statement that he made earlier, that Gordon, you made earlier. If we live on our resources, you mentioned our abundance of resources, water, wind, and all of that. If we live on our resources, how is this water bottling plant really a good fit. It seems like you're acknowledging the fact that water is key, and we're concerned that going forward that we could be experiencing more and more diminished supply of this precious water.
Well, let's talk about that for a minute. The city of Cascade Locks averages 77 inches of rain a year. We have a watershed of about 23 square miles, with a average 77 is down at the city level. At the upper end of the top of the watershed, it's 110 to 112 inches of rain a year. It comes down, it flows into Herman Creek, it flows into Oxbow Springs flows into Little Herman Creek flows into Big Herman Creek. The average flow of Herman Creek is about 98.7 cubic feet per second on an annual basis. We're talking about taking 0.5 cubic feet, less than one half of 1% away from that flow. It's like if the total flow of the Columbia River was an Olympic-sized swimming pool, Nestle would be taking 7 quarts of water out. It's not going to impact the quality of the water, the temperature of the water, or the amount of the water.
Well, since he responded, give you guys a chance to counter-respond, and then I'll go on to the next question.
Well, look, I'm not a hydrologist, but one thing I am, I'm a hiker. And I go out to Herman Creek. I go out to Dry Creek Falls, which is part of my backyard. And I'm telling you, with my own eyes, the water, it does not, you know, it's not flowing at the rate that Gordon would have us believe. Just, you know, a couple days ago, I was up there, and it's a trickle. So, you know, if you're dealing with averages, I think we just need to be real cautious with that because, you know, we've heard, you know, recently in the news about the temperature. I think that the record fish kill, and just recently yesterday they just lifted the ban from fishing. The water is warmer, and we're really concerned about, you know, the cold water from Oxbow does have a tremendous effect. You know, on the environment and the health of the fish.
And could I just add something, Paul? You know, I would also add that, you know, precipitation in our area has, you know, pretty much fallen as rain and not as snow. And as a result, we have diminished snowpacks. We have a receding glacier on Mount Hood. And so we're losing our natural reservoir that feeds the streams, the rivers, and our groundwater. And, you know, again, you know, I think many of our listeners have probably been following what's going on in California. I mean, we have a good example there of what a projected drought can do, you know, to the local economy and to the environment there. And I think we have an opportunity to really learn from what's happening down there in California. And I would just say that at the Hood River County Emergency, or at the where they declared the drought, Hood River state of drought, Barb Ayers was quoted as saying, "Every single forecast at the state and federal level shows this is a long-term drought. They're our lowest level since the early 80s, and unless some miracle comes along, it's not going to go away soon."
Can I respond to that, please?
Well, let me, sure.
There are 63,000 acres under water rights in Hood River County under cultivation. That water is fed from Mount Hood. The city of Cascade Locks, the aquifer that we get from Herman Creek and Little Herman Creek, are not connected to Mount Hood glaciers or water flow. The amount of water Nestle would take would irrigate 181 acres out of those 63,000, but it doesn't flow to that acreage that is under cultivation. It flows into Little Herman Creek, and it flows into the Columbia, where it's immediately undrinkable.
Well, this is one aspect of the environmental question that we're going to get into deeper. If there's any hydrology experts out there who would like to ask even more pointed questions or make any comments, please feel free to give us a call. I know we have three callers waiting already. I ask you just hold off for just another few minutes. I really want to get into the other environmental questions because the water is obviously the most significant one because this is a water bottling plant. But there's also the plastics involved in the transport of the materials, the plastics and others, and the transport of the water in terms of truck use, among other questions. So I'd like to give it to the local Water Alliance folks to talk about the broader environmental questions.
Since you mentioned the transport of water, I mean, one thing that really hasn't been brought up in discussions that I've heard and been involved with in the city of Cascade Locks, and again, this is to just reiterate that this is more than just a Cascade Locks issue. You know, even if it could be demonstrated that, you know, we've got ample water and it's not coming from the glaciers on Mount Hood or whatever, it's quite possible that if Nestle gets their, you know, foot into our town, that they could, as they've done in other instances, start trucking water from other water supplies, possibly elsewhere in the county or in the region. Once they've got their plant built, there would be nothing to stop them from doing that. And then, you know, that could threaten environments, habitats, other economies in other areas beyond our city borders in Cascade Locks. So I would just like to add that. I don't know if Aurora has something.
I just have a real quick point. Look, putting water in plastic bottles just doesn't make sense, you know? We can drink tap water. And I really, just environmentally, when you consider the, you know, what goes into the production of plastics using petroleum to create it, and, you know, as my husband said, he is a avid sailor and was out in the Pacific, and there are islands of plastic out there. So environmentally, it doesn't just affect the gorge. It affects what happens downstream and into the oceans and the marine life that that are impacted by the pollution from the incredible amounts of plastic, especially from plastic bottles. It just doesn't make sense.
Gordon.
There was a report on the news the other day that 90% of the birds have plastic in their stomachs, and I understand that. But public water systems only supply 14% of the total water used in the United States. 80% of it is in agricultural uses, irrigation uses. Bottled water is 0.04% of the total water usage in the United States. And I understand the plastics argument, but if you're going to go after plastic soda bottles and plastic ketchup bottles and plastic car key fobs and all of the plastics that have the potential of reaching the environment, don't limit the prosperity for Cascade Locks because plastics is a much larger issue. Oregon leads the nation in recycling. Don't limit it to just plastic water bottles. But I'll give you an instance on where plastic water bottles are welcomed. We just had a fire in Cascade Locks, right in the middle of our downtown area. The firefighters who were fighting the fire needed to be hydrated as they were fighting the fires. I went down to the store, I bought Dasani, which is a Coke product, so the firefighters could rehydrate and drink the plastic bottles. And we recycled those plastic bottles. There's a purpose for plastic bottles and time and a place for them. But they're right. We need to be environmentally have a stewardship in our environment and recycle more. But that limits our prosperity. Bottled water will surpass bottled soda. Probably by 2017, bottled water sales increased 7% last year. If you're going to go after plastic bottles, go after all plastic bottles. Don't just limit it to water.
Okay, real quick response, and then we're going to open up the phone lines.
Sure, I just want a quick response is, you know, sure, we all really need to be responsible about our consumption. And I just want to say this, that I think Nestle, along with Coke and Pepsi, they have created this market of bottled water in plastic. So, you know, there's a difference between, you know, taking, I could take the tap, and put water in my reusable bottle, but I can't do that with ketchup. I mean, I could if I go to a restaurant and I pump, you know, that way. So I just have trouble with that argument.
Okay, so let's open up the phone lines. Leslie, you're on the air.
Hi, good morning. So science projects that the drought and the rising heat is going to continue. Everyone thought that the lumber industry was going to go on forever. That was never going to end. It has. So if Nestle is allowed to come to Cascade Locks, and then because of environmental conditions, maybe a major fire, it's decided they're no longer wanted there, or they no longer want to stay, then what is Cascade Locks going to do? What are the projections for after Nestle leaves, which at some point they certainly will?
I think that's a great question. If Nestle leaves, then we're going to have a $50 million plant there that we can treat water, surface water with, instead of having to build our own water treatment plant.
Is that true? It would be convertible?
Sure. They treat water just like we would treat water.
Would you have the need to treat that much water?
If everybody else is in drought and we still get our 77 inches of rain a year or less, we could ship water.
I'm just really concerned. I because water has become such an important commodity, I have a hard time believing that Nestle will leave. And what I worry about, I mean, we're seeing it in California. People are just coming up with, more sophisticated infrastructure to keep pumping the water. And there's a quote, I don't know, Ed, you can help me out here, but the Nestle, is it the spokesperson who said that if they could, they would pump more?
Oh, the CEO, yeah. I think, of Nestle North America down in California, talking about the pumping down there. He said something to the effect of, if I could pump more, I would.
That was either out of Sacramento or there's a national forest where they've been paying like $500 a year or something for pumping millions of gallons.
No, careful. The permit in the San Bernardino Forest is to transport the water through the Forest Service land. Nestle has owned the water right, or the people that they bought it from have the water right since like 1888. So it's not the water they're paying for, it's the opportunity to pump it across the national forest.
Right. Well, in effect, that's what they're paying for, you know, to get the water, and that's all.
Right, but they've been doing it under the permit process of the Forest Service, and it's still valid, but they're...
I believe that permit actually expired.
1989, but it allows for an annual renewal until the Forest Service deals with the permit, which the Forest Service hasn't done because they're in line. So,
and I think the Forest Service, was it the supervisor? He now works for Nestle, I believe.
Let's put this in perspective a little bit. Nestle has 5 water bottling plants in the state of California. They bottle 700 million gallons of water a year. The drought in California is 300 billion gallons short. And 700 million isn't going to make a difference for that 300 billion shortfall. And again, 80% of that 300 billion is for use in the agricultural industries, where the greatest potential for improving water usage is in agricultural and irrigation.
Well, anyway, the question of how much that additional water might be useful to the particular communities that are impacted is an open question. But let's get a response from that and then go to our next caller.
Well, one thing I want to just say is, you know, I think just the whole concept of water being a commodity, you know, and it's being privatized essentially by Nestle is really disturbing to me. And, you know, the idea, we keep hearing about, oh, we have excess water and it's just going, you know, down into the Columbia, but that's so important. We need to keep it in the loop. So I just, you know, anytime I hear about excess water, I've got, you know, a big question mark for me. Like, I have a hard idea. It's hard for me to understand that argument of excess water.
If I could just add one super quick thought, because I hear Gordon keep bringing up about how much water, agribusiness uses, for irrigation and all that. And, you know, really this is an issue that's not just about the amount of water that, you know, agribusiness might use compared to a single bottling plant might use. Really, it's also about that this is going to set a very dangerous precedent here in the Pacific Northwest. And once Nestle gets their foot in here, who's to say that other bottling plants can't come in, because it's already been done. And that will continue to stress our local, our fish habitats here, and continue to stress agriculture here that is trying to be local and sustainable. And
there are 30 water.
Hold on. We got to go to some callers. We have several callers patiently waiting. You are listening to Wednesday Morning Talk Radio. I'm your host, Paul Rowan, and I'm here with three guests. I'm with Gordon Zimmerman, the city administrator of the city of Cascade Locks, and Ed Delval and Aurora Delval with the local water alliance in Cascade Locks. So let's go to our next caller. Mitch, you're on the air.
Oh, first of all, I wanted to thank you very much for having this debate to deepen our understandings, because I have friends who are very passionate against it, and being unemployed, I am very passionate about creating jobs, and I also see the bigger pictures here, but at some point, we have to make hardcore decisions, and the question I want to ask both sides of this debate is that as I walk around Portland and I see various bottling plants in neighborhoods that used to support the work shifts at those bottling plants 10, 15 years ago, I go in and the diners are closing, the bars around those bottling plants are closing, and the reason is because those plants no longer have worker shifts. They're all automated. You know, 28th and Burnside, you guys see that beautiful Pepsi bottling plant, and it has not supported business on 28th, because when I ask the businesses, well, when do the workers come off shift, they go, there aren't any workers. A truck occasionally pulls up and takes the syrup that is all automatically mixed for Coke or Pepsi or whatever, and I'm just wondering how many real jobs are coming with a water bottling plant.
Okay, thanks for that question.
And please keep doing this kind of debate. This is a wonderful use of KBOO's air.
All right, thanks for the call. Who wants to go first?
The Nestle is opening a water bottling plant in South Carolina right now, about the same size as would be in Cascade Locks, and they have 50 jobs, again, at full build-out. To run the plant, clean the plant, run the packaging, and do the shipping and the warehousing and all the rest of that. So, I can only reflect what Nestle has indicated to us, that there will be 50 jobs at the plant at full build-out. Now, that full build-out will take about 4 years to get to that level, because they build one water line first and run it for a year, then they build a second water line, and then they'll wait a couple of years before they do the plastic extrusion water bottle. So, again, it's 50 jobs in Cascade Locks is like 4,000 jobs in Gresham or 25,000 jobs in Portland. Portland would welcome right now 25,000 jobs.
I'd like to respond to that. Thank you for the call, Mitch. I think you raise an interesting point that we haven't really considered as openly, but first of all, in terms of the jobs, I think the availability of jobs or those potential jobs that Nestle is saying will be available, I think is what Nestle is counting on us to focus on. I mean, that's the seduction, right? There's no guarantee, though, that those jobs will be available to the locals, as Gordon already pointed out. And I think it takes us away from the larger issue at hand, and that is, you know, if the projected, you know, if these droughts continue and we do experience a diminished water supply, as we're seeing happen in California, you know, the availability of jobs in our local economy, I mean, that's also, you know, that'll start to diminish as well. And, you know, and what you're talking about, Mitch, in terms of automation, You know, I think the former CEO of Nestle, I think in a video clip of him, you can see him standing at a window kind of looking out at the factory, which is largely automated. And he makes some comment about the fact that he doesn't really see any workers. And he seems really, you know, excited about that fact. And, you know, I think going into the future, again, I think if we keep the bigger picture in mind and look long term, as we need to do with the drought and issues of water supply, you know, the fact is, jobs are becoming more and more automated. And, you know, Nicholas Carr writes about this in his most recent book, The Glass Cage, talking about automation and how many industries, you know, around the globe are becoming more and more automated.
So I'm going to get into this question. We only have about 20 minutes left and we got a full slate of callers. But this, I just want to sort of put out there the question of what kind of economy do we really want? I mean, is it possible that focusing on such a large multinational corporate interest like Nestle potentially might exclude the possibility of a different kind of economy emerging? Are there alternatives that are not being explored in Cascade Locks and elsewhere, because we're focusing on this kind of corporate model, which is essentially an export model? You're basically taking a local product and exporting it out of the local area. I just want to flag that question. Y'all can respond in your own way as we go, but let's go to another caller. Go ahead, Jersey. You're on the air.
Thank you for taking my call. Most importantly, and as a sidetrack, the overall questions about the public's influence on these questions is what I still have a hard time imagining. We don't have as much of a say. The incident in San Bernardino National Forest, I believe it was, when that Forest Service person essentially became a lobbyist for Nestle after that decision was made. That puts me in a very simple question. To the person representing here in Cascade Locks, is like, are you going to work for Nestle after this?
I'm going to retire.
Good answer.
Is there another question you would like to ask?
Well, it really was part of the public issue. So I'll just actually echo what was said much earlier and much more importantly, and that is, this will not be the end of Nestle asking for more water, because it's going to be up in 4 years by the time we get to the worker level of 50. Who knows what kind of drought will be happening then? And then they would have to go start searching the other way. They just would. There's no other choice in their mind, of course. So.
Okay. Well, thank you for that. You. The whole issue of the process for making the decision, we haven't really touched upon. I did mention that this, you know, it's been around for about 7 years, but there was a problem with the water, rights to the water, and the solution to that has been sought by Nestle, and has been proposed jointly by the City of Cascade Locks and the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife. Presumably in conjunction with Nestle, since they're that basically the applicant for this bottling plant, is to switch the river, the water from pure underground spring water from Oxbow Springs for water of undetermined temperature and quality from the underground aquifer of the City of Cascade Locks. And that proposal is in the pipeline, as it were. A decision has not yet been made by the State Water Resources Board. There's been various attempts to make comments on it. I'm not sure where all that's at, but so that is where that process is at. I don't know if people want to talk about the process, what sort of possibility there's been for public input.
Well, I do want to say this. We have, you know, ironically, I think with the No Nestle campaign, you know, with ordinary citizens, I think it's actually brought our community together more. So not just in the city, but also I think with other residents like in Hood River, and again, you know, some Gorge residents, and obviously with a lot of Portland supporters. So, but what I'm really what we have been frustrated with is that when we go to our city officials, so both city council and also to the port, is that we feel like there hasn't been real engagement, you know, and real public engagement in that arena. And I just want to put it out there that there's someone in our group who is actually very pro-Nestle 6 months ago, but as she did more research, she is like really diehard local water alliance person, and she wants us to ask the questions and you know, for us to be really cautious here.
Well, if I may, I would just like to add something about what you brought up just a moment ago, Paul, about alternatives. You know, what would the alternative look like if we didn't have Nestle in our town? And I really appreciated the way Gordon, you know, opened the kind of the discussion today. And, you know, in listening to him, I got the impression, and I get this impression from living in Cascade Locks as a resident, that it sounds like we're doing pretty darn well, especially in these last few years, with tourism growing, housing, some new residents moving into the town, you know, Bear Mountain expansion. We've got the Puff Factory moving in and doing business. And we have the fish processing plant. We have the Brigham Fish Market. We have a great brewery in town that I know people have been wanting and, you know, talking about, oh, we need a brewery. Finally, we have Thunder Island Brewery. Great group of people brewing some great beer. And, you know, I think we can build on this momentum. And, you know, Cascade Locks can be and is and can be even more a great place to live and do business. And I think what we need to do is be building on the momentum that we have and continue to attract these kinds of businesses that you know, work well with the values of the people that live in Cascade Locks, that live in Hood River County, and, you know, really try to grow maybe an ecotourism economy. And I would just add that the city of Cascade Locks has an opportunity to attract, for example, a medical marijuana dispensary in the town. But the council, pretty much by passing an ordinance, adding some language to the state's language, you know, that it says a dispensary can't be placed 1,000 feet from a school, they added some additional language that makes it pretty much impossible now for a medical marijuana dispensary to come into our town. And I think, you know, that's a business that the city is turning away, and yet, you know, at the same time, they seem to say that we're struggling, we want business, but I don't know if Gordon, you want to respond to that?
I'm not going to go to the marijuana question.
Okay.
But the water question is interesting. Breweries use 7 gallons of water to produce a gallon of beer. 1.6 million barrels of beer were brewed in the state of Oregon last year. It took about 350 million gallons of water to make that 1.6 million barrels, which is about three times as much water as Nestle would take out. Nestle would not be the first water bottling plant in the gorge. Earth to All is in Hood River. There are 30 water bottling plants in the state. Orion's Juice, Full Sail Ale is in Hood River. They take about 35 million gallons a year out of the watershed. Not our watershed, the Hood River watershed. Earth to All bottles water out of Oxbow Spring, or not Oxbow Spring, but Culver Spring in the Deschutes area. And they ship that water to China. If you're going to go after Nestle's Cascade Locks for shipping water to Portland, you better go after Earth to Oil for shipping water to China. There's so many other places to go.
That in itself, those are reasonable points. I mean, I haven't really interjected myself, and I guess I will hold back from doing that. I usually interject myself a lot more, but since I have three guests and got a lot of callers, no, those are reasonable questions. I don't necessarily think that's a...
The question was about public process. Can I address that for just a second?
Sure.
The whole goal here is Oxbow spring water is exactly the same water chemically as, and it's exactly the same water in the aquifer that we pull the city water out of. The difference between the two sources of water is the city water, when it's pumped out of the ground, is about 0.2 to 0.3 degrees warmer than the water that comes out of Oxbow spring. Oxbow, it's the exact same water. It voluntarily comes to the surface versus the groundwater that we pull out through our wells. The process has been to exchange that water, because that water, the little warmer water, does not hurt the fish, and can use the ODF&W can use that water for their fishering process. While we take the spring water, and whether it's manufactured market or whatever, Nestle is willing to buy that. Nestle is not going to get the water right. The water right will always reside with the city, or always reside with the Fish and Wildlife for the rest of the Oxbow spring. So we're not exchanging water right. We're exchanging water with Nestle.
Can I reply to that? It's just, you know, I find it really curious, because, you know, I've heard this argument that this is not going to hurt the fish. And what I'm hearing from the tribal people is that I don't understand, if this is going to help the fish, why aren't they in support?
Because I don't think they understand. Okay, it says it violates the Treaty of 1855. The violation of the Treaty of 1855 was simply that the state of Oregon, the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife, did not notify the Warm Springs tribe that we were going to do this exchange. That was the violation. The fish, because the ODF&W will be able to raise the fish longer in their pens and release them into the Snake River watershed, the fish are going to be stronger and be able to survive more. You can't discount the predators and the sea lions and the birds and everything else that it goes after the fish, but it at least gives the fish a little bit stronger chance of survival. The environmental impact, they're going to be trucking water from Cascade Locks, which is 50 miles from Portland, rather than 650 miles out of Sacramento. So you got less truck traffic and less air pollution and carbon footprint.
That assumes that the model of bottling water and transport is the one that we accept, which many of us aren't willing to accept. These are, again, you do put out the fact that there's these internesting issues of Earth 2.0 sending their water to China. Yeah, we need to resolve all these questions. I guess I will interject myself. I mean, I guess the point I made earlier is the what sort of model of economy and social relationships do we really want to have? Do we want to have a multinational global economy or not? And Gordon, you're bringing up some perfectly valid points that I think do need to be addressed. We can't necessarily, just because they're a supposedly an earth-friendly company, let them off the hook for doing things that may not be the best, because we may not be able to keep this model, economic model, up for an indefinite period. The things are really in question, not just with the drought, but with the shakiness of the international economy. But anyway, we only have 8 minutes left, and we have a full slate of callers. Let's go to our next caller. Annalisa, you're on the air.
Good morning. And thank you for that interjection, Paul. That's just needed. And Mr. Zimmerman sounds so glib, and it's a typical...
Well, just get to your question,
anyway,
please.
Water is vital for the survival of the planet. Coca-Cola and all the other horrible sodas are not. And we do have to start fighting other plastic bottling companies by not buying it. But water is vitally important. And to say that, for instance, 700 million gallons of water in California doesn't make an iota of difference is quite ignorant. If you add all that saving of water that you might not have to use and use it for the right thing, then we might get somewhere. But please, keep fighting this Nestle thing. And how many places have they been rejected? I like to know that too. Thank you.
Okay, let's quickly just go to another caller, and then people can respond to a couple or three callers in a row. Go ahead, you're on the air. Jimmy.
Yes, I just had a quick comment instead of a question. It's more of a heat of warning. I am from the Imperial Valley, where the Salton Sea is drying up. I moved to Oregon about 2 years ago. I just want to let you know that you guys really need to pay attention to conservation of the water, because right now there are a lot of people that are developing health problems because of the sediment that's been in the ground for years that's rising up. A lot of the livestock are dying. A lot of the crops are getting tampered with and polluted because of all the sediment that has been at the bottom of the sea. So you guys really, really, really should take in consideration of this drought. It is a serious issue. Please, please, please take in consideration. Thanks.
Okay, let's go to one more caller. Mark, you're on the air.
Good morning, Paul, and your panel. I have a couple of comments, and I'll make them brief and a couple of questions. The groundwater may be chemically the same technically at this moment, but the more you pump groundwater, the more it reaches various chemicals from the aquifer, and it won't remain the same. And I believe Nestle, according to the contract, has priority over creek water, so if there was a shortage of groundwater, it would be very difficult to turn off Nestle's water supply until that environmental situation changed. If you folks are interested in creating jobs, you have to realize that Nestle's number one goal is profit, and their profit is maintained by having the smallest labor cost possible. They're taking more money out of the gores than you're leaving in it. And I think if you wanted to create jobs, the city of Cascade Lock should open up their own water bottling plant. You don't need Nestle to do that. I'm not sure why Nestle needs a tax break, and maybe you can explain that. They're a multinational corporation with revenues in the billions and billions of dollars. The amount of tax breaks that they would get on this bottling plant are insignificant compared to their profit, and the only people that lose from that is Cascade Lock. And I guess that's pretty much it in a nutshell. I know you're out of time, so thank you.
Okay.
Let me talk about the property tax abatement. Yes, they would not pay about $3 million to Hood River County and the associated governments with Hood River County over the first 5 years, but for the next 45 years of the plant, they would pay $45 million in property taxes that does go to benefit the schools and the community colleges and all of the governmental entities that are in Hood River County. You're right. All businesses are there to make a profit. They couldn't survive if they weren't making a profit, and that's simply the model that we're built on. We need to provide the infrastructure so that companies can come, provide the jobs. We get the payroll that's in there. The community would survive. The city would get more money so we could take care of the infrastructure that is required for us to do and help us pay the debt service on our current infrastructure so that we can maintain the rates at a lower level than we could if we didn't have Nestle. The point is Cascade Locks will survive whether Nestle comes or not. We're a survivor town. We have been a survivor town. We've had lots of disappointments, but we're still around. It just would be nice if we had a little more money in the budget.
Well, maybe I'll just respond to the last point you made, Gordon, that we'll survive no matter what. I mean, if that's true, and if we can continue to build on the very good momentum that I'm seeing happen in the town in terms of businesses coming in and influx of new residents, why would we even want to get mixed up in this deal in the first place? It just seems like a bad deal all around. I don't see this as a good deal for fish. I know that's come up in the, you know, talking about the water exchange. It's going to be beneficial to fish. I mean, if this were about fish, I mean, ODFW and the city of Cascade Locks could probably strike some exchange deal on their own. We don't have to then in turn sell off the water. So, you know, Nestle can bottle it and put it in trucks and start, you know, exporting it out of our county. That just doesn't make any sense to me.
I was just signaling to our engineer not to take any more callers. Sorry.
Oh.
Sorry to those of you in the audience who are confused by these extraneous verbal exchanges. We're just about out of time. We only have a couple minutes left. I've been talking with Gordon Zimmerman, the city administrator of Cascade Locks, Ed DelVal, and Aurora DelVal with the Local Water Alliance. We're not going to really have time for extensive summations here. I think you've gotten a feeling for what the positions are. An hour goes by real quick. If you want to just a couple quick last words, Aurora, then Gordon.
Sure. Well, first of all, thank you, Paul, for having us on the air. We need to keep this issue alive in our community, keep the conversation going. And I do want to just, you know, thank the listeners for tuning in, and also just want to direct your attention to our Facebook page, No Nestle in Cascade Locks on Facebook. Our website for the Local Water Alliance is kind of under construction, but if you want to keep the conversation going, please head that direction.
Thanks, Ed and Aurora, for traveling all this way to talk to me. You're welcome in my office anytime. The city is looking for economic development and some way to create jobs and provide a little stronger foundation, financial foundation for the community, so that we can provide all the services that communities normally provide and provide them well. And that's why we're continuing to look not only at the Nestle opportunity, but we're looking at lots of opportunities. The port's doing an excellent job in advertising, marketing. Cascade Locks is a place, a coming place to do business, and we look forward to working with the port on developing any of the economic development opportunities they heard from us.
Okay. Well, those are the last words, and obviously this debate will continue in other forums, and we will continue to cover it here on KBOO Community Radio. Thank you very much to our guests.
Thank you.
And thank you to all who've called in and those who listen and do not call in. This is Wednesday Talk Radio. My name is Paul Rowland. Thanks for listening. Stay tuned for more great programming.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Lights, Camera, Action, making video easy on Wednesday, September 2nd, 6 p.m. at Portland Community Media. Lights, Camera, Action, a collaboration between PDX Tech for Good and Portland Community Media, this seminar will show you how to make high-quality video for outreach and fundraising using the cutting-edge technology available at Portland Community Media. Again, that's Lights, Camera, Action, making video easy on Wednesday, September 2nd, 6 p.m. at Portland Community Media. 2766 Northeast MLK Jr. Boulevard in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.